I've noticed an annoying trend. Maybe you have too. You buy something, maybe online, maybe at a store, and they ask for your email address. And then the next day, you get an email asking you to review your purchase. Could be clothes, could be a hotel stay. How'd you like it? And if you don't respond, another one. We noticed you haven't responded, but we would really like to know what you thought of your purchase. So what's going on? Phil Fernbach is an assistant professor at the Leeds School of Business at the University of Colorado Boulder, and he's studied online ratings and reviews. He joins us. Welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on.
So why am I getting all these emails asking me to review things that I've already purchased?
Well, there's definitely a couple things going on. One thing is when consumers go online nowadays, reviews and ratings are definitely one of the most important sources of information they look at. And one thing we found in our research is that when people see a large number of ratings, they treat that as informative about the quality of a product. So they see a large number of ratings, they actually think it's a higher quality product.
Even if some of those ratings are bad.
Absolutely. So people really pay a lot of attention to them, give them much more trust than they actually deserve.
But let me give you an example here.
Sure.
Because recently
sure.
I took my car in because there was a crack in the front windshield and I went to mm-hmm. Safe Light and I got it replaced. And within a couple of days, I got a request on email asking me to review how they did. And then I didn't respond because I don't have time and I don't care. And I got it replaced and that's that. And I paid for it and it's over. And then the next thing you know, I get another one saying, a reminder, please go and review it. And then after that, another one, a third one saying, please review it. And it really makes me wonder, how badly do they want this review?
Yeah, I mean, there's very little cost for them to send out an email. And there's quite a bit of incentive for them to get people to evaluate these things. Typically, evaluations online tend to be quite high. So chances are you're not going to go on there and give a bad evaluation. A lot of websites also use an algorithm to try to determine the way that they sort product options. And a lot of the times those algorithms will take into account how many times people have reviewed a product. So there's a bunch of different forces that sort of go together to really incentivize companies to want you to go on and evaluate things.
But when you say that these reviews really matter and that they want other people to see that they have a lot of reviews, even if those reviews mm-hmm. aren't great, how much do they matter compared to all the other things that companies use to advertise their products?
That's a great question. So if you look back before the age of the internet, how people got product information, what kind of information they used to make inferences about the quality of products, the major things were variables that were under control of marketers, like the price that you pay. People very strongly believe that a higher priced product indicates a higher quality product. They looked very strongly at the brand name and so on. And those things still matter. But when people are on Amazon.com or other websites and they see that star rating, that thing sort of drowns out everything else. It's really, in our studies, we find it's the most powerful predictor of the quality inferences that people draw. The sort of other side of the story is that it turns out that that average rating is really not that predictive of the quality of the product. So there's been created this situation where people really overestimate the validity of these things. But they really do exert a huge influence on people's decision making.
Do you think that'll last, or do you think people will eventually catch on to what you're saying, that the reviews aren't necessarily indicative of how the product is?
You know, that's a great question, too. In my experience in describing our results to people, they say, wow, I see all your data and I really believe it, but I just still trust these things. There seems to be this very powerful sort of mental connection that we see between that average star rating and quality. And sort of you point out to people all of the different flaws in these things. You know, there's fake reviews, there's randomness, there's consumers who just really don't know how to properly evaluate more technical kind of products. All these things add up. But when people see that average, they just go with it.
So at this point, what should a consumer do? Should they use some other measure to decide which product to buy?
Yeah, we definitely don't advocate for completely ignoring reviews. There is some quality information in there in the ratings. It's just not nearly as much as people think it is. Another thing that people do is they tend to ignore the sample size. So if you only see 20 ratings, it's probably not enough to really know that this product is a 4.5. It could be a 3.8 or something like that. So people should really not completely ignore them, but they should scale back how much they rely on them. One thing we really looked at in terms of trying to understand the quality information is evaluations by experts like people at Consumer Reports, who really have been doing scientific product testing for many, many years. And so that's another thing that people can do. Try to look for more expert evaluations, especially for more technical product categories where the experts are doing the sort of scientific side-by-side tests that your average consumer can't really do.
Brings up another point, which is unrelated and yet also kind of related, which is after I buy something, let's say I go and buy some bowls, and the next thing I know, I'm being advertised these very bowls that I already bought on my Twitter feed or wherever. And why does that happen? Does that make any sense?
Yeah, absolutely. This is the most fast-growing area of marketing right now, analytics and data analysis, where companies are using information that they have about you, either sort of demographic information or it could be online behavior, your purchases, all of that kind of stuff, to build up some kind of a model that predicts how you're going to respond to different kinds of offerings and things like that. And so companies are getting much, much better at targeting consumers specifically with things that they're likely to click on and maybe buy.
Even if they've already bought those things.
Yeah. So your example indicates that these models are not perfect. You know, they're getting better, but they're not perfect. So they make kind of silly mistakes all the time.
But it's still worth it for them to send that out just in case I haven't bought it yet. They're better off annoying me with something than not telling me to buy something that I might still want to buy.
Well, you know, there is a line there. If they annoy you too much, that's probably a bad thing. You're going to maybe not want to go to that website again or you might just get frustrated and be less likely to buy. But, you know, when people are putting an ad on the internet, they're not expecting 50% of people to click through to that. You know, they're expecting 1% of people to click through. And if they can increase the number of eyeballs that actually look at that ad and they get 1.1% to click through in a sort of aggregate way, that can really add up.
And speaking of annoying people, let's go back to our original question. Is there anything that I can do as a consumer to stop getting emails after I've already bought something to review the product? Because I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, that's a tough one. So on a site-by-site basis, there might be ways to opt out. But in general, people should just get used to the new world, I think, that we're living in, which is that marketers have a lot of information about you and you're going to get a lot more targeted kind of responses and product offerings and those kind of things. But it's going to be hard unless you sort of go dark and go off the grid to escape from this new world that we live in.
That's Phil Fernbach, an assistant professor at the Leeds School of Business at the University of Colorado Boulder. Phil, thanks so much.
My pleasure.